Money FM 89.3, best of prime time.
A special feature interview with Minister Chan Chun Sing with Howie Lin, prime time, only on Money FM 89.3.
This is Primetime on Money FM 89.3. I'm Howie Lim. Now, Singapore's been hit hard by the pandemic, and amid movement restrictions and border closures, the economy contracted 5.8% in 2020. But Singapore's economy began a K-shaped recovery with Budget 2021 announced in February. The outlook is promising, and Singapore continues to be one of the most competitive and pro-business economies globally. For his insights, we're joined today by Singapore's Minister of Trade and Industry, Chan Chun Sing, to discuss transforming Singapore's economy for a post-COVID future. Minister Chan, happy to speak to you again.
Thank you for having me on.
So it's been about 3 years since we last spoke. I was starting to feel a bit slighted, but the matter at hand. What do you think, though, was the most worrying economic challenge that Singapore faces thanks to the pandemic?
Well, if I have to summarize all this in one word, I would just say perspective. Now, why? Let me explain. Actually, the challenges that we face are not unique to us. When people talk about protectionism, people talk about technological disruptions, supply chains disruptions, reorganization of the production systems and all that kind of things. Actually, the truth is that everybody else in the world they're all facing the same things. So why I say perspective? Because if we have the proper perspective, a positive perspective, then we will start looking for opportunities. But the other part about the perspective is that we must not hope that we're going to go back to the pre-COVID world, because the world has moved on. So if we have the correct perspective, then it will drive us to start looking for new opportunities amidst the uncertainties. So just to give an example, people say that, well, it's going to be a very much more uncertain world. I said, well, there's an opportunity there if we can position ourselves as a safe harbour for mobilising capital, aggregating talent or protecting intellectual property, then we distinguish ourselves. When people talk about the disruption of the supply chains and everybody is trying to reorganise their production to have a China plus one strategy or an India plus one strategy, then we ask ourselves, well, can we be the plus one as part of the ASEAN region? And if so, then we can have other opportunities. When people talk about the disruption by, say, the digital world, and people can compete for jobs without being in a certain geographical location, then we ask ourselves, how can we also expand our market share without being physically present in those markets? Mm. So, for example, I think today many of our companies, including SMEs, have gone onto the digital platform. And now they are able to access markets way beyond Singapore that previously they probably couldn't be accessed in the same way. So there's always an opportunity if we have the correct perspective and to understand that so long as we make the necessary changes, adapt to the circumstances, then we will still be able to make a living and perhaps even distinguish ourselves from the competition.
So given the current climate, though, outline the most significant economic policy pivots the government had to make in the past year. Perspective change?
Well, I think last year, when the pandemic first hit, I think our first priority was to really stabilize the situation to prevent the companies from closing down and massive job losses. Because the problem with job losses is not just that people lose their jobs, but people lose their confidence and their skills become less relevant or less current. And that's why we want to make sure that as we flatten the infection number, we also flatten the unemployment curve, so to say. Now, this year, we will have to pivot our budget to helping our companies gain new capabilities. Because as we say, we're not going back to the pre-COVID world. So whatever we do, we can't keep looking backwards and hope that the good old days will come back. But actually, we have to prepare for the good new days, if you like.
Okay.
No? How do we prepare for the future? And that is really tough because it requires us to spend money to build up the capabilities of our companies, the skills of our workers. But that is definitely the correct way to go forward, because then we will be able to prepare ourselves for the COVID or the post-COVID world compared to preparing ourselves for the pre-COVID world.
So you also recently had the Committee of Supply debate for your ministry. You talked about Singapore not sending the wrong signals to the world with regard to openness. What did you mean, though?
Well, you see, in today's world, everybody is playing defensive, perhaps less Singapore. Because when supply chains get disrupted, when people lose their jobs, people start to think of how do I protect myself by closing myself out, closing myself off from the world. So, you know, as they say, you know, if only I can keep out the foreign competition, maybe I will do quite well. Mm. Now, that's how many people in the world is thinking. But for Singapore, we don't have such an option because our domestic market is very small.
So finite, yes.
Yes. So our perspective is totally different. Our perspective is if the rest of the world are going to close themselves off, then there is an opportunity for us to remain the most connected place on earth so that people can come here, invest in Singapore, create the jobs in Singapore for our people. And if we can win such investments to be planted here, not only will we take care of the current generation, we will also allow the next generation to have a much better opportunity in securing higher quality jobs. Mm. So to us, well, it is a crisis for everyone, but it can also be an opportunity for us if we do the right things and send the correct signals to the world that we are still welcoming to their investments. We will allow them to mobilize their capital in a trusted legal system. We will allow them to aggregate globally competitive teams. We will also protect their intellectual property because people are looking for places to put their investment for the long haul. Mm. And we can distinguish ourselves from that. And that's why the policy consistency, the policy coherence is so, these are also important in competing for the next investment dollar to come into Singapore to create a better jobs for our people.
But at the risk of exaggerating, no sense only we are open. Mm. Protectionism is rising. Mm. I mean, how do we navigate this?
Yeah. So one of the things that we have been doing, even prior to COVID, is to make sure that we diversify our risks. Since our independence, we know that we can never depend on our domestic market.
Yeah.
So the world must be our hinterland for resources and talent. The world must also be our market for our products and services. The more we diversify across different markets, across different products, the less we are held ransom by the vagaries of any one particular market or product. And that is what we have done, but that is also what we need to continue doing going forward. Now, the second thing that we have done is, you know, people ask, why do you sign all these free trade agreements and have all these new digital economy agreements? That is our way to say that if you put your money and your investment in Singapore, you have the best chance to continue serving all these different markets, even amidst a pandemic or even amidst the protectionist measures that people are trying to apply to their economies. So we distinguish ourselves by taking a different path, and that will put us in good stead.
So how has the pandemic also affected Singapore's role in global trade then?
Well, there are some aspects that have made it even make us more attractive. Mm. So just to give an example, you know, with all this disruption of the global supply chains, but we made it as a policy to never restrict exports for our benefit, but to the detriment of the global supply chains. So we have earned ourselves a reputation as a trusted partner. And that's very important. And that's why even last year, amidst the global pandemic, there were people who planted significant investments in Singapore because they trust us to make sure that we will keep our word, to allow them to fulfill their international commercial contracts even amidst all the difficulties. And that's very important.
Yeah.
And that was actually how we have built up a reputation even in the 1970s during the oil embargo. We make sure that at that point in time, we never restrict exports for our own benefit, but to the detriment of others. And by the 1980s, when we started building up the Jurong Island, we had a reputation as a trusted hub. And that's what is very important to us. And that's something that I think we would be able to compete in. That's our competitive advantage compared to many others. Because you think about it, I mean, many countries, when they are bigger, they will always compete on the basis of the size of their labor pool, the size of land, the price
resources.
Of their labor, resources. Mm. Whereas we have to compete on the basis of what I call the intangibles, the trust in the government, the stability of the system, the skills of our workers, you know, how we bring the ecosystem together to compete as a system rather as individuals. So these are the intangibles that I think put us in good stead.
So what's being put in place, though, Minister Chan, to cushion Singapore against volatility, unknowns in the long run, you know, another health crisis, another environmental or any sort of mass event crisis, so to speak?
Well, there are quite a few things that we need to put in place in order to insulate ourselves against the vagaries of either natural pandemics or, you know, man-made policies. Now, first thing is what we talk about is diversification. Make sure that we have diverse sectors, diverse products and services, so that we are never entirely dependent or overly dependent on one particular source and one particular market. So that's diversification. But the second thing that is equally important is to make sure that we entrench ourselves in the global value chain. And what do I mean by that? A lot of people, they compete on the basis of price, you know, and the size of their operations, but we know that we can't compete on that.
Yeah.
So when we look at how things are produced, there are always critical components and parts that small niche players like ourselves can play a part in. Which means,
for example?
That, so for example, that day, you know, in Parliament, I gave this example of that special block of metal that we bought in a huge machine that used to produce the fiber for the surgical mask that we produce, that we are now able to produce. Then we realized that whether you buy the machine from country A or country B, they still use the same block of metal that has those very fine holes that allows the very fine fibers to be produced in the factory. And that company that produced that block of metal actually has a niche market.
Mm.
And on the other hand, if you look at more common example, you know, many people talk about producing semiconductors, chips and that kind of stuff. But actually the key part of the whole production, the value chain, is actually the machines that produce those chips. And in the world, there are only a few countries, a few companies that can produce that kind of technology to produce that kind of chips. So these are what we call critical parts of the global value chain. And we must seek to entrench ourselves in these different parts, different critical parts of the global value chain, to entrench ourselves in the global value chain so that we will not be easily displaced. So, you know, circumstances can change, but there are these critical components that if we are in play, it will make it much more harder for people to displace us.
Give us an example along the chain where we could find that hole, I suppose, and plug it.
Well, semicon could be one example.
Yeah.
So there are some machines that are produced, very high-end machines that are produced by certain players in the world. And some of those IP belongs to some of the companies in Singapore. So we have a part in that production. Recently, I visited another company. For example, this is Illumina. So they produce test kits for the world, for including for some of the COVID test kits. And they have this technology that goes into the microwell, which is a very small plastic components that you can't even see with the naked eye.
Mm.
And for some reason, over time, they have built up those capabilities to develop that. So today, they have a commanding presence in this test market. And very few people can displace them from this market because the technology that they have, the skills that they have built up, is so difficult.
It's so specialized.
It's so specialized. Mm. And that is what I think we must constantly seek to achieve in different lines of productions.
Mm. Mr. Chan, let's talk about Singapore's vision to become a global business innovation and talent hub for advanced manufacturing by 2030. How exactly are we being positioned to capture these global shifts towards diversification?
Yeah. So why we have this aspiration to do so is because technology now allows us to have a different dimension of competitiveness. So let me use an example. Now, in the past, if we produce a product, people usually look at the quality and the price. And that, of course, is still important. But today, when we look at the same product, we learn something. With Industry 4.0, with additive manufacturing, it's not just the price and the quality of the product that's important. It's the ability to evolve the product at speed, which means keep having different of the products and keep improving the product. In the past, it will take many months, many weeks to redesign the product and to redesign the production system to produce that product. But today, with additive manufacturing, to simplify the number of parts required, with huge amount of computing power to crunch the data, they are able to redesign the product at speed. So you imagine it's like evolution being conducted at speed. And the speed to market, the speed to redesign and regenerate products become a competitive advantage. Now, that is something that we can compete in compared to other people with larger landmass and perhaps cheaper manpower. But one of the things is that, of course, all these new technologies don't come cheap.
Mm.
And many of the SMEs may not be able to acquire these capabilities themselves, which is why we are trying to provide what we call platform services, which means that, for example, you go to, say, the Siemens Technology Center, they are able to help you with your product and evolve the product at speed so that you can beat the competition and have a better product to the market at a much shorter time and incidentally, also perhaps cheaper and of a higher quality. That's how competition has changed compared to the previous competition.
So collaboration is
important. Collaboration is important. And when we look at the manufacturing 2030 plan, we are no longer looking at the mass market products. We are looking at much higher end, much more customized products that are like what we discussed just now. They play niche roles in the global value chain that makes us hard to displace.
Whilst we understand those security that comes with diversification, what other sort of economic benefits are there as we move away from a reliance on a few markets?
Well, once we move away from a few markets and we are able to serve the global markets, then, you know, it's very rare that you see every part of the world, every part of the economy going down at the same time. I mean, to be frank, even during the pandemic, there were some sectors that were still growing. And because we have diversified our economic structure, it actually helps us to ride through that. So last year was a very good example. So, for example, last year, many sectors were down, particularly aviation and tourism. But last year in our economy, our manufacturing did reasonably well. The biomed sector did well. The ICT sector did well. So that is just an example of diversification at the sectoral level. Now, last year, at first, the Chinese market wasn't doing well because they were first hit very seriously by the pandemic. Then, because we had markets in the European side and also the American side, that helps to cushion part of it. Then subsequently, it flipped over because the situation got worse in Europe and America. But actually, the Chinese economy started to recover. So with that, you see another dimension whereby we minimize the risk because the different markets allows us to so-called hedge the risk and diversify the risk. So that's just another example. But if you really want to go into detail, even within a sector, we have different products that will help us to hedge the risk. So everybody thought that biomedical have done well last year. But it's not entirely true and not exactly correct because many of the elective surgery were put off because of the pandemic. So those people that produce things that serve that particular market didn't do as well. But on the other hand, because of the capabilities build up that we were able to reconfigure to support the COVID testings COVID-related medical devices and products, those make up for the deficit in the other parts. So diversification has different dimensions across different products line, across different markets, and of course across different sectors. But overall, we have avoided a more serious recession if we have not diversified.
Some of these larger shifts sometimes get lost on the common man, if you will, regular Joes on the street like myself. Some of this is flying over my head, Minister Chan, I've got to admit. And I'm thinking back to 3 years ago when we last spoke. We had the luxury of talking about our dream jobs. And I remember you telling me you'd always wanted to be a librarian just so that you could feed your obsession with reading books. So we don't have that luxury today. What can people do to sort of shore themselves up, if you will?
Actually, I'm pretty confident about Singaporeans, and I go back to the issue of perspective again. The strength of the Singapore system and our education system is that we have a very good foundation. That's necessary, but not sufficient going forward. I've always said, even during my time in NTUC, it's not talking about spending the first 20 years of our life preparing for our first job. Then we forget to upgrade ourselves for the next 5 or 10 jobs that we might take on for the rest of our career or our working life. So going forward, so long as we have the right attitude and the right foundation, we will need to couple that with the attitude to say, I want to keep learning throughout my whole life. And Singaporeans generally do well and can distinguish themselves amidst the global competition because of the solid foundation that we have and the drive that we have to keep improving. One of the assumptions that we must make going forward is that it would be very difficult to say that I'll do only one job and I only need one set of skill for my entire life. And we have to keep upgrading ourselves. And that is why if we look at our education and training budget, we are increasingly putting more emphasis on what we call lifelong learning and not just the compulsory education part. That will help to put our people in good stead in the competition against other people.
Here's the hot question. What's the hot skill to get then, Minister Chan?
You'll be quite surprised. In fact, many of the employers tell me this. They are less worried about what subjects you do than your desire to learn. Learning to learn and learning to learn fast is a core skill set. And what do I mean by that, and what do they mean by that? Because they know that whatever you learn in school, chances are that by the time you leave school, it might be a bit dated.
And the half-life of skills.
The half-life of skills has just been
halved even more.
So I remember, you know, my sister did accountancy. So by the time she graduated from the accountancy faculty, in her first job, her boss told her, you better start learning now, because since you, whatever you learn in your first or second year in uni, by the time you are here now, is about 2 or 3 years later.
And you better need to upgrade
your skills, even for a fresh graduate. So, but then, because of the foundation that we have given to our students, I think our students are able to learn much better and much faster. But we must never be complacent, because there are many hungry people beyond Singapore who is perhaps looking for the same job. And in today's world, when everybody talk about work from home actually, it means work from anywhere across the world. So people can take our job without being in Singapore. But on the other hand, we can also take other people's job without being there. And I'll just share this particular story. I went to a company in Singapore.
Whose job did you steal, Minister Chan, now?
This is the interesting one. So 3 days into the lockdown, because the Malaysian workers can't come, 3 days into the lockdown, they realized that actually the worker from Malaysia can still continue to provide some service support to the machines that they were operating from Malaysia remotely, just using an iPad. 3 more days later, they figure out that, hey, the Singapore worker can also service the machines in Germany, Dresden, Germany. So that got everybody thinking, okay, that's not bad. We are now doing jobs in Germany. And someone say, hey, wait a minute. If we don't keep ourselves ahead, maybe 3 more days later, the Malaysian worker will do the job in Germany instead of doing our job, and we do it in Germany. So you see, the world has just become much more competitive. So the competition is never local, it's always global.
Yes.
But if we have the solid skill sets and we keep learning, then I think we have every chance to believe that we can succeed amidst the competition.
Very quickly, what did you use your Skills Future credit for this year?
Haven't got time to do that
yet. Thank you, Minister of Trade and Industry Chan Chun Sing, for joining us today. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me here.
This is Prime Time on Money FM 89.3.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SPH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.